Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. And in the summer edition of the Jewish Action, we have a special section dealing with Jewish unity. And we've asked various people from around the world to contribute. One of those that we're very fortunate has decided to contribute and wrote a very nice article is Shira Schmidt. And Shira lives in Israel, and she's on the phone right now. Shira, how are you?
Hi, I'm okay.
So you participated in this program that we were embarking on at the OU with the Jewish Action, and we asked a whole series of questions about, you know, how do we achieve harmony and tolerance and et cetera, as far as achdus. Your response was perhaps one of the most fascinating, and I want to make sure that I understand it. You were talking a little bit about Hanukkah and saying how really the story of Hanukkah is really more about the battle against the assimilated Jews and who are really the enemies of the Maccabim, and that, you know, maybe disunity has always been a part of the Jewish world, and we have to learn to expect it, and maybe it's not all that bad. Did I get that right, or am I missing something?
Not only that, but I think that unity could be problematic, even dangerous.
Okay, so if unity is dangerous, then disunity is healthy.
Yeah, it shows vitality. It shows that people care. Care about values, care about lifestyle, care about issues.
So people who are passionate about something are going to be strong advocates for that position.
So, of course, you could carry this on ad absurdum, but anything that's too extreme would be problematic. Not everyone is passionate, is legitimately passionate, but on the whole, in the Jewish world, I think that we benefit from having people who take a strong stance and would fight for it. That's the example that's
a
Makarot gift
from
Hanukkah.
Okay, and let me try to understand the story of the Hanukkah story. I mean, you're basically saying that, I mean, the battle, are you saying that one of the battles was not just against the Yuvanim, but also against the assimilated Jews? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. I'm not saying that. I think that it comes out of the sources.
Okay. So, but the battle was both. The decrees that were put forth by the Greeks were, you know, where you couldn't observe Rosh Chodesh and Brit Mila and so on. That was done to all the Jews' people. But you're saying part of that was because they were allowed to do that because of different people in the Jewish world who were supportive of that.
Yeah. I mean, you had people even without the decrees who were engaging in activities, be it Avodah Zarah or other activities that are prescribed by Jewish tradition. So it wasn't only, and I would even, I think, even the major enemy or opposition was not the Yevanim, but the Mityavnim.
The Mityavnim, they were the major enemies, more than the Yevanim, in a way.
I think they were more dangerous, yes.
Uh-huh. What they were advocating, though, was positions which were anti-Torah positions, correct?
Yes.
So what we're talking about here, we're not talking about people who are advocating anti-Torah values. What we're trying to determine, is it possible for people who are passionate about their Judaism to still live with other people who perhaps are somewhat different and maybe equally passionate and yet have respect and tolerance? I mean, that's the point of, I think, the what we're trying to achieve. So, I mean, how do you feel about that? I couldn't quite understand from reading your article. I didn't understand where you were in that.
Let me give you a concrete example.
Okay.
Let's leave Hanukkah. Let's go to another holiday. Today is Rosh Chodesh Iyar. By the way, Chodesh Tov, or as
right.
They say where I live here in a Hasidic neighborhood, a Guten Chodesh.
Good. Okay.
Now, we have a heavy Yar coming up, Yom Ha'atzmaut. So, I want to give you an example of how you can a group can strongly adhere to and passionately adhere to its own customs, but still have a motive to vendi. by chance of circumstances, I happened to be living in this Hasidic neighborhood. I'm not Hasidic, and I live here because my husband was a physician in the Laniado Hospital, which was built by the Sand Hasidim, by the Klausenberger Rebbe, who survived the Shoah. He made a vow to build the hospital. He built Laniado Hospital, Sand Medical Center here in Netanya. And since my husband was a surgeon, it was convenient to live among the Hasidim in the neighborhood here. So a visiting professor who studied Sanz Hasidim, I invited him here. And according to his documents, he thought that the Sanz Hasidim were extreme as far as observance. He would classify them on the most right-wing end of the spectrum of observance and their attitude towards the state, etc., according to the documents that he studied. He came here, and he sees they run a modern hospital, and there's a junior college for the girls, and many of the men serve in the patrols, with the police, in the Mishmazuchi. And he said, how can you live, how does the Chassidim live with this seeming dichotomy or a conflict with the actual sources, with the written sources and the shooting, the response of the Klausenberger Rebbe and of the Sanz Hasidim. And the answer of the rabbis here answered that it was a model, and I think this model is useful for discussing unity and disunity. The model that they said that they live by here is concentric circles. In the center circle, they adhere very, very strictly to the Sanz customs. But there are outer circles in which things are much more relaxed. Example, there's a calendar for the Sanz Hasidim and have a printed calendar that they send to all the Hasidim, they send it to all. And that calendar has the outside of the Rechaim, the first Sanz Rebbe, of the Klausenberger Rebbe, of the dates that are important for them. It doesn't have Yom HaTzma'ut, it doesn't even have Yom HaShoah. It has the Jewish holidays, and that's the calendar for the Sanz Hasidim. Laniado Hospital, which serves the whole area from Kfasava up to Hadera, it's the only hospital here. It serves Jews, non-Jews, religious, Arabs, Christians, tourists, everybody. The calendar that the Laniado puts out, they're one of these fancy calendars with pictures that they send to all their supporters. And that calendar has Yom HaTzma'ut, Yom HaShoah, it has all the various holidays, and is organized according to January, February, March, April, whereas the inner circle Sanz calendar is organized according to Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, etc. So this is an example of how you can have an inner core that keeps and adheres very tenaciously to its customs. But in the outer circles, they're more relaxed. Same thing, there's a minion here, the Rebbe's minion. The current Rebbe is the son of the Klausenberger Rebbe. His minion keeps every small custom of Sanz. But there's also a minion that's like a shtibulach, and people come from all over Netanya. There's one minion after another during the day, and Sfarim come, Ashkenazim, Mizrahi, non-religious people have a yard site, and they're not strict at all about the Sanz customs. So again, there's an example of how you have the core, and then you have peripheral circles, and I think that's a nice model of a modus vivendi. On Yom HaTzmaut itself, the school, the yeshiva, the hotel here in France, the hospital, they all have Israeli flags, but they also have a Bar Rav. They have a day for the whole city of Netanya of shiurim. They have shiurim because people are off, and they offer shiurim, a variety of shiurim of the top Magidei shiurim, to the general population. So that's another example that's quite immediate, because we're talking now on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and another few days will be Yom HaTzmaut.
Okay, so they've been able to, in a way, keep their own values and yet create this unity among the community, because there's a certain amount of tolerance for other things other than what they themselves subscribe to or believe in, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so that's you think, if we could find a way of doing that, we probably could bring a lot more harmony and unity to Klausville, right?
Yes, that kind of model.
So, and do you think this model is applicable in other places? In other words, let's take this model of the, you know, concentric circles, and let's take that to a more, let's say, I'm not just talking about Israel, I'm talking about other places in the world and so on, where, let's say there was going to be a Torah journal. Would it be possible for the people, let's say, who was a Dayan in the Sands' world, could he write an article that would appear in a Torah journal with people who were from other parts of the Jewish world that were perhaps not exactly in tune with what the Sands', you know, philosophy is?
I would say that there are, not everyone. In other words, let me give you an example of that same, that professor who came, secular professor came, it's actually a whole class, a whole seminar of other professors and graduate students. It wouldn't be appropriate, say, for the Rebbe to participate in the discussions for various reasons, but some of the top, one top Dayan was there, one super scholar was there. I mean, they really pulled out the big cannons, the sons, for these professors. And so if I would apply that example to a journal, I think that there are people here who could participate, but there would be, there's always some that would not want to because it would mean somewhat compromising to participate in such a journal. So they have their own, and if you want to hear their voice, you want to hear such a person's voice, you can read what he or she writes in the Sands journal. But I think that and I'll give you here's another example. See, I'm talking about things that I know about.
Okay.
The Sands magazine that the Sands put out is the pages are numbered only, you know, in the Hebrew letters, and there's no secular dates there, and it's really according to their custom. But Laniado Hospital puts out a magazine, and there you have pictures of women and donors, and you have show nurses and female doctors, and always in modest dress. And I wouldn't say no holds barred, you know. There'll be a picture, you know, they'll actually, you know, they'll touch it up, make it a little bit more modest. But, you know, in one journal you won't have women. And another journal that is on the Nether Hospital, it's on Medical Center puts out, they don't have a problem with it. So,
but, you know, I could look at it a different way, okay? And I could say, well, you know, for fundraising and to raise money, this is what they have to do. So, I mean, if they went out in their regular calendar or in their regular journals and didn't have all this, then maybe a lot of the people who they advertise to, who you know, give money to the hospital, would not want to give money because they would feel they're not as inclusive as they should be. So, therefore, from a fundraising point of view, they do that. And it's not really what they believe in, but when it comes to business, I guess everything goes.
I would say, first of all, yes, you're right to a certain extent that practicality is factored in. You know, when you're running a hospital, you learn that you have to compromise. When the Sands Rebbe founded the hospital, he was writing these nurses, and he wanted observant nurses or nurses who were sensitive, and so he started a nursing school, the Tesler School of Nursing, and one of the Hasidim came to them and said, "Gee, you guys, what those girls are learning? I mean, they're learning about the parts of the body." And the Sands, the Klausenberg Rebbe, said, "Well, if that's what you have to learn to be a nurse, so you have to learn it." So he didn't, you know, maybe he didn't anticipate this beforehand, but the practical application of his idea meant that he would compromise in teaching that were very ordinarily. You wouldn't teach girls. So you're right. The practical need to run the hospital does necessitate, but there wouldn't be no holds barred. There are limits. There was one issue that I don't remember what the problem was, but they halted the printing, and they said it was some problem. Maybe it was the picture of the Rebbe was exactly opposite something that was inappropriate. So they stopped printing, and they had to reprint that edition. So there are, I wouldn't say that that's the only motivation. I think it's one of the motivations, but I think they really do want to do it's a kind of outreach. I mean, it's quite a big burden to run the hospital, and
there's no question. It's a gigantic burden. They do a great job. But in the article, you also write that that if there's no difference of opinion, in other words, you're living in a very sterile environment. In other words, having differences of opinion is intellectually stimulating and it opens up the world. But now, when you look at, certainly in Israel, and then really throughout the world in a way, what's coming about is such a tremendous polarization that in every community, everyone looks alike, sounds alike, dresses alike, has exactly the same hashkafa, no differences at all. And if there are any differences, those people sometimes feel very uncomfortable. So aren't we heading exactly in the direction that you think is not really positive?
Yes, I agree with you. Yeah. I'm not sure what you have in mind about unity. Are you talking about in the Orthodox world, there's a certain...
Yeah, well, I'm saying like in the Orthodox world today, in other words, when you live in a community of like-minded people and there's no one who's different than you, then you have a lot... You begin to develop an intolerance for people who are different than you. And you begin to understand that maybe you begin to think maybe your way is the only right way. And that creates disunity, not unity, because unity is where I can live in my neighborhood and have other people who live in my neighborhood who are not exactly like me, and I could still get along with them and be friends with them and care about them, but not exactly agree with everything philosophically that they believe in.
You're right. There's a risk, but I think the risk is worth taking. What you say reminds me of arguments that I used to hear about not sending their children to Hebrew day schools. Some people would say, non-Orthodox, you know, I want my children to meet a variety of people. I don't want them just growing up as Orthodox. But the price that they paid for sending their children, say, to public schools was a very, very, very heavy price. So there's a risk, and their feelings, they're right, there is a risk if you are constantly in the milieu of Orthodox people or people like you, be it whatever lifestyle, then there is a risk of homogeneity. And the case of education, there's also the risk of losing your identity. So, I think that I see what you're saying, that there's unity within, you know, there's a sameness, a homogeneity within
exactly
Orthodox schools.
Right.
And, and since I'm against homogeneity, I should be against that. But
right. We're not necessarily talking about, you know, halachic issues per se. We're talking about minhagim and customs and certain kind of approaches and so on, all within the framework of what would be acceptable within, the centrality of a Torah world. So this is what, you know, this is what I'm saying. But, I mean, I understand your point. Your point is that, you know, that... that, you know, we shouldn't be too alarmed by the fact that, you know, that there's a certain amount of disunity also, because it's always part of life and it's always been a part of life, and we have to deal with it. But, you know, I'm certainly interested. You know, your article was, I think, really different. I think the people who read it will see that your response was perhaps the most different of all the other people who responded. And so I really wanted to make sure I had you on the program, and I think now we have a much better understanding of what you're saying. So I want to thank you so much for giving your time and for writing the article and for being on the program. So we had Shira Schmidt, and good luck to you, and thank you so much, okay?
You're invited to come here and see for yourself what I've been describing.
I will. The next time I come, I'll see for myself. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.